Willkommen zu Unruhige Zeiten, dem Podcast vom und für den Mittelstand.
Ich bin Lars Lindekogel von TTE Strategy und ich spreche alle paar Wochen mit Geschäftsführern, Entscheidungsträgern und Unternehmern von Mittelstand Champions in Deutschland. Und diese Podcast-Episode nehmen wir auf Englisch auf, denn ich habe heute einen internationalen CEO eines deutschen Hidden Champions bei uns, und zwar den CEO von Mabanaft, John Perkins. A warm welcome.
Thank you, Lars.
It's good to have you on the show. How are your German language skills coming along, John?
Very poor. I understood that we have an international CEO in the room of a German hidden champion, but corporate language is English. However, I'm getting very adept at asking for directions. So taxis, these are things I need to know. So wie komme ich am besten zum, and then it'd be Rathaus, Bahnhof, wherever I'm going, and then just hope I understand the answer.
Well, you found the way to come to the podcast recording.
Yes, that's true.
So that all works out very well.
Google Maps helps.
It's great. It's great to have you here. And we will talk about a potential language barriers in German sure. corporate world a little bit later during our conversation. I'm very much looking forward to that. So I said in the introduction that you are the CEO of Mabanaft. Mm-hmm. And while that is technically true today as we are recording the podcast, by the time of the publication, the company will have rebranded mm-hmm. and will from now on operate under the new name MB Energy. Founded in 1947, MB Energy is a leading energy company that provides energy solutions for transportation, heating, agricultural, and also for industrial needs. And in 2024, the company reported revenues of approximately 12 billion euros and employed around 1,800 people on three continents. 2025 is the year of consolidation, bringing together all parts of the group under the new brand. And I want to discuss with you, John, today about the driving force behind this rebranding, the consolidation, and the strategic and operational implications as mm-hmm. well. But let's start with your CV.
Die Vita.
Okay, John, do you know who shows up first when I Google your name?
I don't. I think it probably depends on what you Google, because I have two brands myself. A Jonathan Perkins or a John Perkins might deliver a different result. I think a John Perkins might be an American author. I've got no idea what comes up if Jonathan Perkins is Googled. Probably not me.
I think when I Googled, I definitely saw you on the first page. Oh. But I also saw a songwriter who writes songs for Lil Wayne, Sean Paul, Pitbull, Nicki Minaj, and others. Are you into music, John?
I don't write songs as some sort of second job. I do like music. I try and go to as many gigs, festivals as I possibly can, a bit fewer these days. And I've actually also started playing music again recently.
Oh, what are you playing?
I'm a drummer. And I had been, actually, all the way through until I was about 25. And then I recently picked up sticks again about 6 months ago.
Okay.
Having not touched them once in between. Turns out you never lose it.
Very good. So are you in a band or are you doing it at home?
I think a band is probably a loose description, but yes, we do go to a practice room and there are some other people playing instruments. Band might be stretching it a little
okay.
bit.
Okay. So we will listen to that and see if
please any don't.
next time you might bring us a recording after some more practice, so to say. So before you became the CEO of then Mabanaft, you worked for a year as the CFO of mm-hmm. the company. And before that, for Gazprom, Morgan Stanley and Deloitte, which job influenced your professional life the most?
I think the reality is they all added something. So it's not really one of those. I think the two big things I would say is Deloitte and Morgan Stanley, very large organizations. You could argue that the system is more important than the individual. Uh-huh. But one thing that, and I definitely didn't realize this at the time, I was being trained on how to do things. There's clearly those are big organizations. A lot of thought had gone into how you would run a process or how they would do business. And you sort of absorbed that without even realizing it. So I took a lot of, I guess, training and discipline from those organizations. But I would say probably what was most important for my career was probably the switch between Morgan Stanley and Gazprom. Mm-hmm. I was at Morgan Stanley and I was starting this sort of towards financial crisis was over, starting to think about what the bank was going to look like in the future. And I was unbelievably now, when I think about it, an IFRS expert. And I was into like structuring transactions and stuff. It's something I've been doing for a couple of years. And I got involved in a couple of commodity transactions. And it suddenly made a lot more sense. So I was going to work. I was doing my job. I was doing a reasonable job. But I can't tell you I really loved or really understood exactly what the client really was interested in and what it meant to me. Whereas you start dealing with energy, it was gas in that particular occasion. I just got it and I understood why we were doing it. I understood what the client was trying to achieve. It just felt a bit more meaningful. So I just decided to go and try and work in the energy space. I went to Gazprom, and despite what you might think, especially now, the brand of Russians and Gazprom in particular has sort of taken, let's call it a bit of a hit over the last few years. But actually Gazprom's, it's a big major, but it was run in an interesting way. The trading business that was based out of London was separate for many years from the rest of Gazprom. And to be honest, if you didn't know, you could have just thought you were working at an independent energy trader. Mm-hmm. And what I really took away from that was it was a young company. It was ambitious. It was trying things, trying to grow. It was really, really pushing. And I just, A, got even more love for the energy business, but also started to see what was possible from a group of people that you put together with the right mindset, the right ambitions, and what you could achieve. And coming to Mabanaft, it doesn't look like the most obvious move. Mm-hmm. You know, I was kind of living in London for the 20 odd years, don't speak German, coming to a German hidden champion. And it's not like I was familiar with Mabanaft before I did some research. But what really got me about Mabanaft at the time was it was also looking to change. And I didn't know this at the time, but there was a change of management of all of the Marquardt and Bahls mm-hmm. managers, the boards, the managers. Mm-hmm. It was going very much more international. And we're family owned. We have been same family for the last 75 plus years. They had a desire to change.
Specifically today, we could say there's a lot of turbulent times, but also calm times. I'm curious to hear from you how you evaluate that, and we'll move to that now.
Unruhige Zeiten.
John, before we talk about the rebranding, the consolidation plans and opportunities, can we go back for a second to the core business of MB Energy? And can you explain in 2 to 3 sentences, what are you doing and what is your strategy?
Sure. I mean, the headlines of our business are actually very, very simple. We have a series of customers in various segments. You mentioned it at the start, largely transportation, logistics, heating, industrial. And effectively what we do is we buy product from somewhere in the world, move it to Germany, store it, and then move it to the end customer and sell it. So it's a pretty straightforward buy product, move it to the right location, sell it to a customer who has an energy need. I mean, that's a very high level, straightforward way of thinking about our business. I think strategically, there's two things. We had two big decisions to make, I think. And we felt that given the uncertainty that transition brings, you need to own one end of the value chain. I think just being in the middle, you come at risk. You've got to be brilliant at whatever your particular service point in the middle is, or have a natural asset position to do that. Mm-hmm. And to some case, we do with our storage business. But we started to think, well, actually, the risk that we're seeing now is that we don't know exactly what the energy source is going to be in the future. So we made two big decisions, really. Mm-hmm. I would say that they're quite obvious, and I think a lot of our competition are seeing the same things. Mm-hmm. Owning the end customer, where the energy need actually is and who's going to be consuming the energy. So we made the decision to be very much more focused on securing the right type of end customer access and trying to serve the right customer bases. Turns out we already were serving a lot of those customers. So actually that's a good starting point.
Yes.
And then change how we think about what we do. So we might have told you 5, 6 longer years ago that we were an oil company and we were delivering oil to end customers. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that, you know, we're suddenly a hydrogen company, because we're not. But the way we think about it is, you own the right end customer, you're serving the right customers. It doesn't matter what the product is that you end up selling to them. So you need to be much more open-minded about the solution that they may want. And we think of it much more about their demand. Uh-huh. So if you take, for example, we have, I don't know, 200,000 home heating customers. Those customers need to heat their home. You know, whether it's with heating oil, LPG, or some other lower carbon solution in the future, to me, that doesn't matter. Uh-huh. We just need to provide that energy and that service to those customers. And that's strategically, broadly, what we're trying to do. I mean, I could give you a longer presentation version of that, but we will come to a few examples.
And I think we'll talk a little bit about your vast portfolio and what you're doing with this portfolio, and also this move towards securing the end customer or the consumer, even in some cases. So one could say, not only with the brand, but entirely with your strategy and in the market, there's a big consolidation opportunity here. And we said in the intro that 2025 is your year of consolidation, so to say. But if you just go back a little bit, so 24, 23, what are the main KPIs that you are looking at, and how is your business developing?
So 23 actually was a record year for Mabanat. So our EBITDA was around 300. We made earnings after tax of about 260. Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier about our revenue figures, which If someone's asking me about what I do, I always quote because they sound so impressive.
Very much so. Yeah. By the way, if you look into which are the biggest family companies in Hamburg, I think Mabanaft is on number 2 or so by revenue.
But the revenue is in my mind sometimes a bit of a misleading number. It depends a lot on the oil price, and it depends quite a bit on how much we actually trade, how many transactions that we do in a particular year. So. Revenue, interesting, good for being, you know,
bold.
Yes. but we tend to look at gross margin, EBITDA, mm-hmm. and earnings after tax. Yes. So it was 260, which was a record year for us in 23. Mm-hmm. 24, it's a much more difficult year for us. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't just us, it was the whole industry. Mm-hmm. I mean, demand's lower, and main KPIs was 140 on the EBITDA and 40 earnings after tax. So quite a significant change. Mm-hmm. But in 23, we also made some big moves. We sold our petrol station business and we made a small gain on that. That obviously boosts those earnings. But our business also has quite an impact when you get disruptions, whether that be inland, so refineries or water on the Rhine, other disruptions or international trade flow disruptions. We've got a very flexible value chain that allows us to monetize those opportunities. And in 23, we were still seeing the impact of things like changing trade flows from sanctions and the Russia-Ukraine situation. Mm. So 23 was a continuation of two record years. That was across the industry, frankly.
Mm. Yes.
Last year, my understanding is compared to our competitors, even the what we would consider to be a less profitable year, actually, compared to our local competition, was not so bad. And interestingly, and I think the other KPIs that we look at is we start to separate now, which is what we look at from the more rateable customer business. You know, how's that actually performing? And if you look at it across the 2 years, I think we made about 210 million gross margin from our customer business in 23 and 198 million in 24. And actually, if you look across a 5-year period, that's been ticking up, which is us supplying energy into customers. Now, given that's what we do as our overall purpose and what we're trying to grow, I think those are pretty solid numbers, and you get the variations due to volatility, basically, because we're in that market where you're also exposed to volatility.
No, sounds very good, with some challenges. And my next question here was to ask you whether you perceive the times as quiet or as turbulent. I mean, I don't really have to ask the question. I guess it's always turbulent, but very briefly, turbulent or very turbulent?
Very turbulent. I think some of it is not fundamental. Some of it's, you know, Trump-based news stories, and obviously trying to understand what the US is going to do and what the impact on geopolitics is going to be. And that hits us in a couple of ways. The direct way, obviously, is just volatility. So when we're trading, we get volatility.
Yeah.
And you can be on the right side or the wrong side of volatility.
Let's have a look into one specific thing. If we look at investments in Germany, many investment decisions in the past couple of months and years have not happened in Germany, but companies have chosen to invest elsewhere also because of energy prices. Mm-hmm. How do you see that? Is that going to improve? Do we need to do something different here in Germany to attract more investment?
So I think it's a little bit of the inflection point that I was talking about. Where do we want to be? How do we want to see the economy in the next, say, less decade or so? I think there's some things that we shouldn't forget. You know, Germany is the biggest demand center in Europe. If you had Europe acting as one, we'd be a very significant economic power. So to think that things are all negative and it's, I don't think that's true. So do I think that investment is justified in Europe? Of course. I think it's time and actually how we foster that and actually attract that to happen as quickly as possible. I think some of the things are quite obvious. I think we could be more business friendly. Uh-huh. I think we could think about the amount of regulation and bureaucracy it takes to do things like get backing for a investment, the permitting. You know, I think the appetite is there, but actually some of the bureaucracy I think could be rethought just to make it a bit more business friendly.
Yeah. And as a UK citizen, as a Londoner, so to say, what would you recommend to Germany? Are there 2-3 tips or
so definitely being business friendly in terms of, you know, the European Union is excellent at publishing regulation and bureaucracy. It's one of the main skills of the European Union.
Yeah. And you are working on some of them. Lieferkettengesetz, we had CSRD and all of those
because
things.
Because we have to.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think how we can make that a bit easier for companies, particularly new entrants and people who want to invest, I think that's something that we could do. I also think, you mentioned it actually, some of the infrastructure investments mm-hmm. are required. And you know, I'm particularly interested in energy, but if you think about the infrastructure investments, we're going to have to invest in power grids. Uh-huh. We're going to have to invest in infrastructure, whether it be the trains, whether it be technology. And I think some of that investment just needs to be made again to make more business friendly, more attractive for investment. I think that has to be committed to and then followed through. Consistency of policy would be helpful. I think, you know, take energy policy, understanding what the regulations are going to be and stick to them so you create certainty. If you look what's happening in the US at the moment, you know, we have some investments in the US and we're questioning that because it's not certain. In fact, it's very uncertain. So you don't want to put money there. Yeah. So certainty has its own place.
So if you compare right now, would you rather invest in the US or in Germany?
Germany right now. Mm-hmm.
So let's move to the next section.
The secret sauce.
On the MB Energy website, it can be read that you have 1,000 ideas to shape a sustainable future. What are the top three and why?
It's interesting you say that it needs to be 1,000 ideas, because I think that might be the case. We don't know what the right solution is, and we don't know what the solution is for each part of our customer. I think they've all got something different. So ideas is actually really important. We just need to bring a few to fruition. I think there's a couple of things. I think one of our USPs is our ability to provide a route to market mm-hmm. for energy. So you remember I said, well, the headline, you know, we buy a product somewhere, we sell it to a customer over here.
Yes.
There's quite a significant piece in the middle, mm-hmm. which is actually how we can land products in Germany, how we use our storage network, and how we have the assets basically to back up that supply. And I think how we're thinking about repurposing some of our infrastructure to basically provide that route to market is really important to us. The biggest examples of that we have here in Blumensand, we're trying at the moment, and we're quite close to getting a permit for an ammonia import tank. Uh-huh. Now, ammonia might be the product that we're importing, but actually it's a potential hydrogen carrier as well. So you can bring green ammonia in, crack it back into hydrogen. You've got a source of not only green ammonia, which could be useful for the bunker industry, but also you've got access to green hydrogen. So these hydrogen carriers and how we create the route to market, I think are really, really important.
So you're betting on hydrogen, or is that just one of the options?
No, we have another project here that's around converting some gasoline tanks to methanol. Mm-hmm. Again, it's a different solution. That would be very much focused towards the harbour and a fuel for the marine sector. But immediately you've got two solutions. You've got a route to market being created for ammonia, if ammonia is the solution being chosen by the shipping industry, but we're also creating a route to market for methanol.
Yeah.
Effectively, we're providing options to our customers. And that's really what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
The ammonia one I mentioned, because it also happens to be a hydrogen carrier. Mm-hmm. We're also looking at the way that we provide outlets to that. So we're investing in hydrogen truck stops, for example, and how we can then start to build that value chain. Because a lot of our customers, and it's not just our customers, but the industry, for years has been trapped into a bit of a chicken and an egg situation. You know, yeah, well, okay, well, we all want to use whatever energy source. It might be hydrogen, use it as the example. Okay, where am I going to get the hydrogen from? At what price?
Yeah.
And then you don't make the buying decision on the infrastructure that you might, the truck, for example, that you'd be using. Then you realize that no one's going to invest in the infrastructure because someone has to start thinking about how we provide that route to market and provide the end customers. And so the important bit for us is providing that option. So we have more than 300 truck stops.
So basically you are solving this chicken and egg problem in a certain way. These are big bets.
We're trying to right-size them for us.
Right-size them. Okay, so but what needs to happen for you to go after a right-sized big bet? If you can say, how do you make an investment decision in something like that?
So some level of visible demand mm-hmm. is obviously an important thing. So we have to have some natural belief uh-huh. in the solution, and you need partners. At the end of the day, you need someone to come with you. We're not a company with, I actually wouldn't suggest that any company did this, but we're certainly not a company that's large enough to take outright risk with completely uncertain cash flows. So what we would typically try and do is we will partner with an end consumer and then we'll work with them to, they will have an energy demand, in this case for green hydrogen.
Do you have an example for us?
Yeah, so we will be talking to shipping companies, for example, in the mm-hmm. harbor. We'll be talking to logistics companies, and we do some of this today. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, we work with them to actually, okay, so you want green methanol, for example.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're going to need some bunker infrastructure. You're going to need the product. And what we try and do is work with them based on their demand and effectively work out how we can meet that.
Yeah. And is that then a joint venture logic, or are you asking for a commitment for a certain period?
So we will ask for the customer some sort of offtake commitment. Yeah. We typically think about throughput commitments from our infrastructure, and then we will try and partner with a producer mm-hmm. somewhere. So we're basically joining that chain together. And that route to market is very, very important to us.
Okay, got it. If I just move forward a little bit, your group consists of a very diverse portfolio of entities and brands till now. So, or just now, we'll talk about that, including Oil Tanking Deutschland. Then we have the entities under the Petronord umbrella. So the end consumer part where you're saying you're pushing more towards that direction as well. Silvay, Fleet and others as well. We have the truck stop operations. You mentioned that LPG solutions. How many entities do you have? Can you count that? And what's kind of your strategy to acquire? Is it a certain number per year? How does that logic work?
So we have more than 40 operating entities. Actual entities, I think the number's more than 100. But actual operating entities, and they typically go hand in hand with the brand. Mm-hmm. We have more than 40, and I think actually nearly 50 brands. Mm-hmm. It's interesting the way that you've described the complexity, because actually that sort of depends a little bit how you look at it. Mm-hmm. So we have multiple entities that are selling heating solutions in Germany to home heat customers. So while we talk about complexity because we may have 10 or 15 entities doing that,
yes.
in reality it's one activity, mm-hmm. which is selling a heating solution into a home heat customer.
So that's also your logic, how you think about the market, how you think about operations and the operating model.
Yeah. And, you know, we've moved effectively from having an entity-driven organization. So our entities were operating on one specific part of the value chain. Uh-huh. Experts in the value chain, frankly, and doing an excellent job. Uh-huh. And all we're trying to do now is thinking about the connecting part. So uh-huh. thinking about it as the value chain, not just the specific part. Uh-huh. So, you know, the best example, to be honest with you, is we acquired a company last year called Westphal. And, you know, everyone starts off thinking, oh, you bought an LPG business, but you don't do LPG. But Westphal has 55,000 home heat customers. Now, we do that. Mm-hmm. What we've actually done is we've now got 55,000 more home heat customers, and we've got multiple product offers.
Yes.
And, you know, what we're trying to do is simplify and streamline. Mm-hmm. And the number of entities, the number of brands, it probably for our existing customer base, probably isn't too much of a problem. They know who they're speaking to. They're used to buying the product from us. We've been doing a great job with these customers for decades, potentially. It's more about how we think, how are we going to grow and how do we want to present?
Yeah.
And customers have got more choices now and more choices coming up than maybe they've had for some time. And it's not only the choice of fuel that you want to use, but some of them will be thinking about transition and how to be lower carbon. Yeah. And in effect, what we want them to see from us is we have this capability to do way more. We've got the system and the value chain that can ensure security of supply, and we can also offer them a range of solutions.
You mentioned Westfahn now. You're integrating that with Petronord, and that moves together as the same, your logic in terms of who are we actually serving here. So maybe two questions. The new brand, MB Energy, is that going to be the brand for all these entities? And second question, consolidating now. What does that mean? We can use a specific example. Is this only the SGA, so the sales and general administration functions? Is that more? Are you also selling together? Can you talk a little bit about that, the brand logic and what consolidation now means?
So it's interesting, Lars, you've actually said it a few times. Consolidating. I would use a different word. So we're integrating and we're trying to find the best bits of our group. You know, we're all basically doing the same thing. We're operating broadly the same regions, selling product to customers and serving their needs. What we're trying to do now is make it as streamlined as possible, make it as efficient as possible, but also being able to use the full power of the Mabanaft group, or now the MB Energy group, so we can always provide the best solution and service to those end customers. We want them to have confidence in us, and we want them to know that we've got capability. They already know that. We want to continue that. Uh-huh. And it's also about finding new customers. You know, we're really interested in going after the sort of more national B2B players that sit alongside our traditional customers, because we have an ability to serve them. We're super flexible. We can do multiple solutions, delivered in, fuel cards, en route with trucks. And we've got multiple delivery points and terminals all over Germany. So anything that's moving in or around Germany or serving an industrial sector in Germany, I think we're well placed to service those. And those customers tend to have transition needs that we can also serve. Yeah. So it's not only about serving the customers we've got, but how we want to grow. In terms of the brand, there's actually going to be two brands. So MB Energy is going to go across all of the entities today, but all of the activities that involve basically the selling energy to end customers. Mm-hmm. We will also brand Oil Tanking Deutschland N-Port. Mm-hmm. And the reason that that isn't just going with MB Energy as well is because of the dual purpose of that business. So obviously it's a USP for us being able to provide the route to market. It's a massive enabler for our delivery business. But N-Port also has its own customers that are very much interested in the storage business, the safety that provides, the security and the access to locations. And we need to recognize that that has a dual purpose, not only about enabling the MB Energy business, but also making sure we serve the customers where we're just providing a storage business. But yes, MB Energy will be the main core brand.
So M is the letter of integration and the path forward. Got it. You have acquired companies in the past that are actually also even older than Mabanaft. So in terms of that, maybe if we talk a little bit about the culture here, how do you integrate them and how do you make this feel good for the people in these entities?
So I think the first thing is recognizing that the reason we have 40 entities, the reason that I'm able to talk about all of this storage locations, the 250,000 customers, is because we've been doing a great job for many, many decades. And I think what we want to make sure that we do is we do a great job for many more decades. And this is a point in time of how do we think we're best going to be able to do that? And I corrected you on consolidation. I mentioned integration.
Yes.
But the market is consolidating. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the products that we're particularly good with liquid fuels, you could argue that electrification is going to make that consolidate. But you look at the number of independent players, many of which are in our group, it's also going to be challenging as the market consolidates to retain all of those players.
Yes.
One of the reasons we want to be able to integrate, be as efficient as possible, use all of the capability of the Mabanaft group or the MB Energy group is we want to be able to win during that consolidation. So we need to be lean, efficient, solution orientated, because I think that's going to protect the business we've got today and allow us to grow. And I think there's plenty of growth to come. And if you'd start talking about the fact that we've done a great job, we've got the constituent parts already of a very successful business, and start to think about how you orientate towards growth, you're naturally getting some alignment straight from the off. Uh-huh. In terms of the cultural challenges, Lars, I'll be honest with you, I learn something new every single day. I think it's about listening to people, engaging with people, being transparent, providing as much information as possible, and trying to paint some picture of the future that means something to not only to the company, but also to the individuals that they want to be part of. It's an ongoing challenge, to be honest.
Yeah, we can dive into that a little bit more, but I get it. I mean, consolidation in the market, you are integrating to serve your customers in a better way, but also to be more competitive in that. If you evaluate or judge MB Energy a little bit on that journey, are you ahead of the curve? Are you on track? Or are you trying to catch up?
Naturally, I would never say we were ahead of the curve. I think if you think you're ahead of the curve, you might be starting to worry about being complacent. So we're always playing catch up. That's naturally what we're trying to do. We're always trying to grow. We're always trying to push. And this idea of continuous improvement, I think, is something that's got to be in our DNA.
Okay.
Compared to our competitors, look, we're MB Energy. We're naturally humble, Hamburg-orientated company. I don't want to say too much about our competitors, but I think we're well-placed, and I'm actually extremely confident that we've got a great opportunity ahead of us to grow, serve customers more, and be our competition.
And I can feel the energy. That's very good. You need top talent for that. Where do you get the top talent from? Here in Hamburg or internationally?
We're very flexible. After COVID and people working more flexibly, that was an opportunity. So you can open yourself up to different resource pools and making sure you're attracting talent from a wide pool of people. So that's been one of the advantages. But fundamentally, yeah, we're still a German organization. We have a lot of employees that are from Hamburg. I think it's really important to us to recognize our home and our legacy. So we'll take from anywhere. We're still largely a German organization.
With an English CEO. So that, I think, is a very interesting combination. And with your background as well, I think drives the right energy in this. But let's dive deeper in this and move to the human moment.
Der menschliche Moment.
So integration inevitably means that roles and responsibilities will change. Some employees will take on new positions while others may also leave the company. How do you ensure that the team is engaged on this journey and also aligned throughout this transition? How do you personally lead the change?
So I believe in things that just, I think of just very, very obvious. You basically set a direction, you try and make that as transparent as possible, and you try and make people understand why you were doing any of the changes. And you know, we don't do any change just for the fun of it. There is a reason. And I think trying to make people understand the why and seeing if we can all connect with that why is an important thing. I said it before. You know, I got into energy because I had a moment where I realized I understood the why, and it was very motivating for me personally. And everyone's got a different why. Mm-hmm. But if you think about things that we're going to try and do, we are going to try and carry on supplying energy to customers, which is great. But we're also going to try and be proactive when it comes to transition. And I think that can be a reason for people to buy in.
The people in your organization, have you heard any whys from them? Do they have this why moment that clicks with them and with you?
Typically, it's always different. You know, everyone's got their own different way of expressing it. And obviously everyone has different, as you said, whys. Typically, I think people are buying into the fact that energy is important. You know, you don't have to look at too many media stories or news stories or know much about geopolitics or how the world's developing to know that energy is super important. You were referencing it before in terms of industrial impact. That's an impact on people's jobs. Mm-hmm. Energy is important. And I think people are actually on board with, I'm okay with being a part of something important. If you can add that to being proactive on trying to find alternative solutions, I think that appeals to a certain type of people. And we're trying to be more dynamic and more modern than we have been in the very recent past, not the long history. And again, I think that can attract people. We're trying to change. We're trying to grow. We're trying to make an impact in a field that is important.
You have a relatively large organization overall. Not everybody will be completely enthusiastic from day one. So what are challenges that you are facing, and how do you address these?
I think change is always difficult. And, you know, we've been operating in a certain way for a couple of decades, to be honest. And it always creates uncertainty. You mentioned, you know, the efficiency and, you know, some of the things that can do. Not everyone is going to buy in to what we're trying to do. That's obvious. We're just trying to make sure that people realize they personally can make an impact, see that there's an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I think just being open, honest, trust, and I think are very, very important.
Yeah.
And be fair.
You know. And as an English-speaking CEO, I mean, is here in the Hafen City in Hamburg, you have an international team. Everyone's speaking English, as you said before. In the field, if you look into your operations in the US, obviously that's not a problem. In Germany, I mean, I know the landscape a little bit. Not everybody speaks English. How do you do it there? How can you reach, as a CEO, how can you reach the people there?
So I think it's important to be present. I think it's important to go and listen as much as you can. And I think the other reality is that, you know, it's not only what I say. Uh-huh. You know, I am certainly not egotistical enough to think that what I say is the most important thing ever. And we obviously have a very skilled team. We have managers. And it's about how we, as a team, communicate, basically speak with one voice, even if we're speaking different languages, and how we listen to our people. It's trying to do the transformation that we're doing and only having one person landing the message. That isn't going to work.
Yeah. And if you look at it, do you observe any general differences between how a leader from the UK and maybe a German native leader, if you like, would address those challenges?
I think the differences are really subtle. In fact, I think we sometimes look for differences that perhaps aren't even there. At the end of the day, people are people, you know, and if people have got the same needs, you know. Some of them are quite basic. They want to know about their job. They want to know about security. They want to know about, you know, how they're going to be looked after. And they want to be doing something that they think is meaningful to them. That's not very different, frankly, wherever you go.
Yeah,
I think there are some differences. Probably the biggest difference that I've learned is the interpretation of rules, I think, is the most interesting one.
Who is more flexible?
It's not even about who's more flexible. It's the way that rules are read. Mm-hmm. So I'm not even sure if this is a blanket statement, but I'm fairly sure that the British read a rule and start to think about how they can go very close to the line, interpret it to use that rule in their favor without breaking it. Mm-hmm. Whereas I sometimes feel maybe this is a MB Energy thing rather than anything else, but I sometimes think we see a rule and then go, we will follow that rule. The rule is actually the same, but the way you interpret it and react with it is slightly different.
I think that's very good advice for everybody listening to that. If there's a rule, think about how you cannot break it, but
work with it.
Work with it to your advantage. Talking about rules, data protection, all those things in Germany, and the big topic of AI. Mm-hmm. Are you using AI in MB Energy, and you personally, are you using AI tools?
If you count the basics, things like Copilot and other things, then yes.
For yourself or for the organization?
For both. I actually think that I pride myself on making sure I do all of my reading. And it turns out I can do my reading twice now because I'll read it and then I'll ask the AI to read it and summarize it and I compare notes. Those are basic things. We're starting to put some significant investment into data and AI now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was really talking about how we start integrating and streamlining across our value chain. And AI, I think, is going to be important to us on a couple of areas that we're already using. Thinking about demand and predicted demand, I think it's going to be important for us there. We're starting to invest there. Just basic stuff around customer data that we haven't had historically, we're now starting to get access to. It's not really AI, it's more data orientated. Mm-hmm. But then I think we can start thinking about how we interact with customers more dynamically in a way that we haven't been able to in the past. So those are the areas that we're looking to deploy AI. We've got some cool We've got an internal ChatGPT system that scans regulations when you ask it a certain question and it summarizes.
How can you stretch the regulation potentially?
Yeah, I haven't asked it that question, but maybe I will when I go back to the office.
that could be a good one. Couple of bonus questions, John. Very briefly, what makes you most optimistic about the energy sector at the moment?
I don't know how many energy transitions that we've been through, probably 5 or 6 at this point. And if you look back, what was successful in the past is fundamentally we came up with a better solution, mm-hmm. you know, more efficient, easier to carry, better volume, better density, whatever it was. And you can see that when we went from wood to coal to oil to gas, there was a natural better solution in place. I'm not quite sure that we've nailed that yet. Uh-huh. However, I'm in the energy industry and I can see how many people are working on solution. And I have enormous trust in humans to solve problems. So even though I can't tell you exactly what the individual answer is today, I'm pretty confident we'll find it.
Okay, that's feels very energizing. In general, you talked about humans looking to find solutions. In general, what should people pay attention to in these times, in your view?
That's a great question. Are you talking specifically about energy or just in general?
Whatever comes to your mind.
I think it's the, like I said at the start, I think at the moment we've got a great opportunity to reflect on. You know, we're looking at all of the things that are around us, what Trump is doing. I think there's a great opportunity to start thinking about, okay, what are we going to do? Mm-hmm. And how are we going to reinvent? And what do we need to do to find an opportunity in the future? And take some ownership of that in Europe. And I think that's always been the advice. I've got 3 kids. I always think of that advice to them. It's like, stop thinking about what someone else is going to do for you and start thinking about, what are you going to do? And I think in Europe at the minute, we've got a great opportunity to do that. And I think that we'll find some good sectors, some good growth areas that, you know, it might take a while, but being open-minded to what's possible, I think is probably the best advice I would have at the moment.
Very cool. I will take that away from my 3 boys as well. So that's a good advice. Anyone who's thinking, book writer, musician, anyone who inspires you on the more non-energy side, so to say?
Inspires is an interesting thing. When I was doing my degree, I did a lot of sort of group theory, group behavior type stuff. So it was the psychology of humans and how people think. And I read a couple of very cool books by a guy called Matthew Saeed, one of which is called Black Box Thinking. And it's all about this open-minded approach versus your closed-minded approach and how you can think differently about problems and that helps you find solutions. I'm a big fan of that type of thinking in those types of books.
Okay, so that's a good recommendation.
I tend to believe that anything's possible. Maybe we just haven't found out the answer of how to do it yet.
Yeah. So the way you are doing, we will have a look in our next section.
Butter by die Fische.
This section, John, we are basically looking deep into your calendar. I see that you have your Remarkable here with you. It may not have your calendar in there, but maybe some interesting notes for us. So in the next couple of weeks between Hamburg, London or elsewhere, can you give us a little glimpse into your agenda? How do you drive the MB energy strategy forward?
Well, you're asking me that when it's an easy answer. So you mentioned at the start that we're currently Mabanaft, but we're about to be MB Energy. Next week is all about rebranding. Mm-hmm. So we've got 2 big events next week, which will relaunch the brand. So with our top 150 leaders on Tuesday as a kind of first step.
Here in Hamburg?
Here in Hamburg. Whole organization here in Hamburg on Wednesday, and then we do the external launch on Thursday. So that's actually quite a big focus for me next week. I'm not doing much else other than doing that next week. Week after, we've got supervisory board meeting and we're talking a lot about the integration and actually how we're starting to drive some customer growth. Those are very high up on the agenda. Mm-hmm. We'll also do a bit of talk about tariffs and how that's impacting the business, a bit of thinking about what we're going to do for the balance of the year. And then the week after, I think I'm going to our terminal in Copenhagen. I think we've got the Hamburg Sustainability Conference, where I'll be talking about some green aviation. So busy few weeks all here.
But sounds like some exciting weeks ahead, John. And yeah, I wish you all the best for the brand transition, for everything else that's coming up. It was a pleasure having you here on our Unruhige Zeiten podcast. Very, very interesting. And I think that you have an exciting agenda ahead. And I really take away your motivational speech on going into the driver's seat and tackling the challenges and the problems and making the best out of it with stretching what the rules allow to do.
Keeping within the rules.
Within the rules, but going to the maximum. So yeah. Thank you so much for
your Lars, thank you very much for having me. And maybe we can speak again about some of the output of what I've just said and the results. But thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it would be wonderful to catch up again. And I'm sure I will follow from the sideline as well. So let me say this in German an die unruhige Zeiten Zuhörer. Wenn euch die Episode gefallen hat, lasst uns eine gute Bewertung auf der Podcast-Plattform eurer Wahl da und abonniert den Podcast, um keine neue Episode zu verpassen. Schreibt uns, was euch gefallen hat und was nicht an hello@tte-strategy.com. Der Unruhige Zeiten Podcast ist ein Format der TTE Strategy GmbH, der mehrfach mit dem Hidden Champions Award ausgezeichneten Strategie- und Transformationsberatung. Und wenn ihr Ruhe und Routine in euren unruhigen Alltag bringen wollt, hört wieder rein bei Unruhige Zeiten.
Unruhige Zeiten.